This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. During the Democratic and Republican primaries, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump sparred over the pros and cons of trade. On this encore edition of the program, we examine the politics of trade, an issue which is as relevant during the general election campaign as it was during the primaries. On this archived edition of Encounter, we present arguments for and against trade and trade agreements. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump slams NAFTA, and Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton was for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, before she was against it. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. No matter who wins, the 2016 presidential campaign has undermined public support for trade agreements and may force supporters of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, to reassess their strategy. Analysts say that protectionism and isolationism in the long run are not good for the United States of America. However, unless we can fashion trade deals in such a way where the benefits outweigh the costs, politicians on the right and the left are not going to support them. Other economists say that the revolt against free trade that has captured both parties during this election campaign could do long-term damage. They argue that protectionism could undermine future growth of the U.S. economy and subvert the nation's role as a global leader. On the other hand, concerns about job losses are serious, and Americans are rightly concerned about economic insecurity and inequality. Well, with us to discuss the pros and cons of free trade and its significance as a topic in the 2016 presidential election campaign are two distinguished analysts. Jim Kessler is Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. That's a centrist think tank based here in Washington. Prior to joining Third Way, he served as Legislative and Policy Director for Senator Chuck Schumer. And Lori Wallach. She's the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. She is an expert on the operations and outcomes of trade policies such as NAFTA, TPP, and TTIP, Fast Track Trade Promotion Authority, and much more. And Lori Wallach joins us by phone from her office. Lori, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And Jim Kessler joins us here in our studio in Washington. Jim Kessler, welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
Well, Jim, here in the studio, let me begin with you. You've been on the program before, and I've heard you say at these microphones that nobody ever lost an election voting against a trade deal. That really struck me. Tell us about that and why you're generally in favor of free trade.
So you had to start by throwing my own words back at me. Yeah, look, trade as an issue has never been popular in the U.S., especially for Democrats. The benefit for trade a lot of times feels very diffuse. The pain that can sometimes happen is very, very acute. Even if the pain wasn't caused by trade, a lot of times it seems like it might have been caused by trade. And this is one of those issues where the support from voters tends to be kind of gentle and the opposition tends to be kind of fierce.
And Lori Wallach, let me get you to weigh in on your perspective on trade and public opinion toward trade.
Well, interestingly, the polling shows that Americans generally favor trade, and free trade is a word that does not have a negative reaction for them. But if you attach the word agreement to the term free trade, it shifts automatically. And the interesting dimension is it's gotten more intense over time, which is to say it appears that what Americans don't like is the outcomes of the kinds of trade agreements that we've had, even though in principle they're actually quite outward-looking and open to trade and think it can be a good thing. So the real question is not one between, say, doing TTIP and TPP versus autarky, or protectionism or isolationism. The question is, what are the rules? And when it comes to this latest batch of agreements that have drawn such broad opposition in this election cycle, the candidates are basically reflecting where the American public is after having lived with the results of these kinds of trade agreements. The good news is there are other ways to do it. But until we do different kinds of agreements, I think we're going to see this continued opposition.
I think that's a very interesting and very valid distinction, that is, distinction between free trade in general and trade agreements. So back to you, Jim Kessler, here in the studio. For example, we hear on the campaign trail Republican nominee Donald Trump blasting NAFTA. So that's an example of a trade deal. He said it was a, quote, disaster for this country. So the question to you is really, what is the consensus after all these years? We must have statistics on the benefits and costs of that particular deal. Do the liabilities outweigh the assets, as Trump would have it?
Well, I think in retrospect, if you look at it, NAFTA wasn't a good deal. So I wouldn't go as far as say it was a disaster, but I think NAFTA did not deliver the benefits that supporters said that it was going to deliver. The important thing is that we've had 17 trade deals since NAFTA. We've learned the lessons of NAFTA. You wouldn't buy a 1993 Sperry Rand computer or a Wang computer, and you shouldn't buy a 1993 trade deal. And look, I have to give credit to Lori and her group and other groups that said these deals have to be better. And so there's labor agreements, there's environmental agreements, TPP has human rights agreements in there, and those deals are better and the outcomes have been better. So if you look just at our trade balance in the 17 countries where we've had trade agreements since NAFTA, and in the blue-collar goods sector, you know, the factory floor sector, our balance of trade has improved by about $30 billion a year with those countries. So we've learned those lessons. The deals are better, but I just don't think the American people realize that. That's a level of detail I think they don't know.
Turning to you, Lori Wallach, do you think, as Jim Kessler says, we have learned from NAFTA that indeed many of the aspects of that trade deal were not beneficial, but 17 trade deals later, we have learned many important lessons that have improved these deals?
Well, I'm curious about what Jim said, because his organization just released a report showing that the biggest increase in the U.S. trade deficit from any trade agreement was from the most recent one, the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement, which has led literally to the doubling of the U.S. trade deficit in its first 4 years. That was President Obama's landmark agreement, the one he touted as actually having replaced NAFTA as being the new model, and it served as the template for the TPP. So the problem is that at the core of all of these agreements are the same fundamental provisions, and literally a lot of what is in the Korea FTA or in the TPP is literally word for word the same language that was in NAFTA. At the heart of that are the investor protections that provide a whole new set of rights for foreign corporations and impose a whole new set of obligations to limit regulation, but perhaps most controversially, to compensate corporations, which can directly sue governments in foreign arbitration commissions of private sector corporate attorneys who can make governments pay corporations for having to follow the same laws that our Congresses have passed, our courts have approved, that apply equally to domestic and foreign firms. Those rules have incentivized offshoring, because if you leave and you're a foreign investor getting those special privileges, you get treated better. But also, they have put at risk wide swaths of domestic policy. NAFTA had Canada as a capital exporting nation in it. But except for that, the U.S. hasn't had exposure to those corporate tribunals. But the TPP overnight would add 9,500 additional foreign corporations, Japanese and Australian firms, among others, and the TTIP would quadruple the exposure so that in addition to the economic problems, these new agreements, by replicating the fundamental core investor rights in NAFTA, would expose our really sovereignty and solvency to some hits.
All right. Well, I'm going to take that as no, you don't think that we have done much better in renegotiating trade agreements since NAFTA. Let me turn back to Jim Kessler. Jim, let's talk about the rhetoric here on the campaign trail, both on the Democratic side and certainly the Republican side, pretty much denouncing trade or trying to avoid the topic or proclaim their standing by the workers. And the perception seems to be that these trade agreements are simply not good for the U.S. worker. And I think that's a very valid concern. So let's talk about how much of this is fact and fiction. We have Bernie Sanders on the left and Trump on the Republican side lining up against trade deals
when in reality, Republicans have traditionally, you know, supported trade, Democrats not, and yet we have a Democratic president, Barack Obama, very much pro-trade. His former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, now the Democratic nominee, was for TPP before she proclaimed her position against it. What's going on?
So there does seem to be a pattern that candidates are opposed to trade when they're running and they're for trade when they become president. There's a sort of a miraculous change when you drink the water in the White House, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders would suddenly become pro-TPP. Maybe the water isn't that strong there. But look, there's a NAFTA hangover. You know, NAFTA was the big deal in the 90s, and it didn't turn out the way people wanted it to. Like I said before, the modern deals are a lot better, and the results are much, much better. The big problem is the middle class has suffered in this country for the last 15 years, and economic growth in this country has suffered for the last 15 years. And we're all pointing fingers at reasons why. Probably the biggest reason why for the manufacturing sector has been technology. The United States produces nearly 50% more manufacturing goods than we did only 10 years ago, but we use 70% of the people. So there's a lot of factors that are going on there, and it's easy to point a finger at something that you feel can blame outside of your borders. But the truth is, if you look at the 40 biggest economies in the world, the United States ranks 39th in the percentage of its GDP that is derived from exports. We are an export laggard. We need to export more goods if we're going to grow the middle class. And the truth of the matter is, with this TPP agreement, if we're not setting the rules in Asia, China's going to set the rules in Asia, and that is going to be devastating for the middle class. So I think for the middle class, I think TPP would be a good deal. It should expand opportunity there. And the alternative seems like an absolute disaster for America and for the middle class, because China is just ready to swoop in and write the rules. I mean, they've got an agreement, and it's terrible for us.
Turning back to you, Lori, before we take a break, to respond, your take on the politics of trade as we see it unfolding in the presidential campaign.
I think the opposition that's been widespread, even before the list of candidates was narrowed down during the primary process, to TPP, criticism of NAFTA, all of that reflects where the American public is because they've lived with the results. But the problem is, contrary to what Jim has said, the most recent agreement, the Korea agreement, just as far as increase in deficit per year, though ostensibly a modern agreement, and in fact the template for TPP, empirically has been the most damaging, not just for manufacturing, but our exports and agricultural goods dropped. Basically, we are having a 1993 model of trade agreements. The 8-track tape of trade agreements is what we see with the TPP, with some additional songs added to the tape. But the history of those 17 free trade agreements, perversely, is our export growth has actually grown less with the countries we have those agreements with than the rest of the world. It's almost a double with the rest of the world relative to the partners. So I do agree with Jim that we need to grow our exports. But again, it gets back to the question of with what instrument. So not only are those candidates reflecting public opinion, but now increasingly there's a growing academic consensus, for instance, that the agreements haven't stimulated export growth, that the agreements have contributed greatly to increased income inequality. And then the big blockbuster study of all was, you know, Professor Samuelson himself, the grandfather of trade theory before he passed away in 2004, wrote a stunning empirical paper that showed because we're now offshoring so many jobs in high-wage sectors, not just manufacturing jobs that are now being automated, but actually high-end jobs in professional service sectors, that the gains that we get from importing cheaper goods, because that's the upside of free trade, it's on the import side, consumers get better choice and less costly products, that gain in lower prices has now been swamped mathematically. His historic formula showing the gains of free trade shows it's now a net loss when you compare the gains in lower goods to the loss in wages. And that empirical data is just backing up what the American public is feeling, which is why you've got this bipartisan nationwide revolt against more of the same trade agreements.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Jim Kessler. He's Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. That's a centrist think tank based here in Washington. And Lori Wallach, from whom you just heard. She's the Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. That's also based here in Washington. We're discussing the politics of trade as Democratic and Republican presidential candidates argue the pros and cons of this issue, which has major global and domestic implications. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to our loyal listener, Song Tin Won Hook. He's from Vietnam. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Well, back to you, Jim Kessler. Let's go back to some of the arguments we hear, especially from Bernie Sanders, the Democratic candidate. He says that we need a trade policy which represents the working families of this country and that rebuilds our manufacturing base. But he's also hinting at protectionist policies, more tariffs, that many say in the long run, this is not helpful. We are in a globalized economy and that we should be advocating trade and doing our best to compensate for losses in certain industries in this country, retraining, perhaps re-educating the workforce, maybe providing even temporary government subsidies. What do you say to those who certainly have valid concerns, like Lori, like Bernie Sanders and others, who are concerned that these trade deals are more favorable to corporations, investors, and not doing enough for those people who are losing jobs?
Right. Well, look, again, you look at the last 17 trade deals since NAFTA, our trade balance, not in the service sector, but in the goods sector, on the factory floor, the hard hat sector, our balance of trade in the aggregate for those 17 countries has improved by about $30 billion per year. And that includes the Korea Agreement, which is one of the three of the 17 in which our trade balance hasn't improved. Our trade agreements have gotten better. There's two alternatives. You know, there's one in which China is setting the rules for Asia Pacific first, and then who knows where else. And that would be an absolute disaster for this country. And that is live and on the table. There's just no doubt about it. China has its own agreement, RCEP, and they're ready to go. And the other is what Sanders and Trump are talking about, which is tariffs and protectionism. We've seen that recipe before. It has led to economic disaster, the likes of which would make the last recession that we have look mild. And it would be a huge mistake. I wouldn't put, Lori can speak for herself. I don't think she falls into either one of those categories, wants to see either of those things happen. But I think the agreement that Barack Obama has negotiated is the best, most progressive trade agreement in our history.
You're talking about TPP.
TPP. And it will increase manufacturing jobs. It will help the economy and it will help the middle class.
Well, turning to you, Lori Wallach, to try to respond to the concerns on the part of those such as Bernie Sanders and, of course, Trump on the Republican side saying, you know, we perhaps need more tariffs, espousing a more protectionist stance. Isn't there a so-called third way, speaking of third way, Jim Kessler's group, whereby we could negotiate better trade agreements that are beneficial to workers? Why aren't we doing a better job at retraining, re-educating our workforce for the mid and latter part of the 21st century?
I think there are two different questions. The first is the retraining question. That only works in compensation as well if trade agreements are only harming a minority of the population, and so you compensate the losers to basically land the gains for the majority. Right now, our current set of trade agreements, our current trade policy, is resulting in negative outcomes for the majority. So you can't compensate your way out of that. And so instead, the question then becomes is how do you change the rules? Sanders isn't talking about tariffs. Sanders is talking about what he would do with trade agreements such as removing those new corporate rights that promote offshoring from high-wage countries to low-wage countries that allow foreign corporations to attack not just U.S., but any partner country's domestic laws and let corporate attorneys make governments, us, the taxpayers, compensate corporations because they don't like being regulated. Sanders has talked about adding things that are missing. For instance, contrary to what Jim said, the TPP has no human rights standards, actually. And given some of the countries that are involved, that is a problem. Or disciplines on currency cheating, so that once you negotiate market access for U.S. exports or any other countries, you get what you bargain for, and a country can't effectively erase your new gains negotiated for by lowering their currency. All of those kinds of policy changes are possible, but the first piece of business is for the TPP to be basically trash-binned. And it's going to happen because, contrary to Jim's notion that it's the most progressive trade agreement ever, the entire Obama base, all the progressive groups, every U.S. union, the major environmental groups, the consumer groups, the youth groups, the entire base of the Democratic Party is actively fighting against the agreement and stopping it as a priority. And the big shift now is, in addition, the Republican base, particularly the moderate small business class and the super conservative sort of Tea Party categories of the Republican base, have become animated actively against TPP. And as a result, there simply isn't a majority in Congress in favor of it. The only way it could get passed is if it got slimed through in a lame duck session where the folks who've retired and the recently fired members of Congress get to come back and vote. Instead, we should be thinking about what we're going to do to replace bad project, the TPP.
Just a quick follow-up before I turn to Jim. What about Jim's point about if we don't fashion agreements such as the TPP in particular, that we're going to let China set the rules for trade? And of course, we know that if the TPP isn't passed, many of our friends in the Pacific region could just sign up for China's Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which would set the trade rules in Asia and probably include weak intellectual property protections, no labor or environmental protections, and no discipline on state-owned industries. Again, talking about trade-offs, nothing's perfect, but the opposite could be much worse, don't you think?
Well, the thing is, it's not a trade-off between TPP or no rules. We already have robust trade relationships under the World Trade Organization with the same countries that are in the TPP. We have free trade agreements with 6 of the 11 other countries in the TPP already. So as far as the notion of it's either TPP or we're not going to be able to trade with those countries, that's just a misdirect. The foreign policy argument, that unfortunately is the argument of last resort that gets raised for every trade agreement when the economic case fails.
Okay,
so
actually,
during NAFTA, we were told if we didn't do NAFTA, Japan and China would eat our lunch in Latin America. We did NAFTA. China's share of Latin American trade has increased enormously. The question is, what are the rules and then what are the outcomes? So I would go with the various industrial chieftains and former military folks who basically point out that the TPP would weaken our relative stance vis-a-vis China by undermining our ability to manufacture the goods we need for our defense and our infrastructure. Being weaker because of a trade agreement economically is not the answer to outcompeting China.
Well, Jim, I'm sure you want to respond.
Let's just be clear. If TPP isn't signed, and look, I believe on the merits, even without China out there as a specter, it is a better deal than any trade agreement the United States has signed already, and the deals have gotten better. But if we don't sign TPP, China will set the rules in the Asia Pacific. There may be some who disagree, but to me that is like disagreeing that ice sheets are melting in Greenland. The RCEP agreement, the regional agreement that you spoke about, that China is ready and salivating to get U.S. allies in Asia to sign, would be absolutely devastating for the geopolitical world that we live in. It would set China on a course to surpass the United States economically and militarily. I am not familiar with any military leaders or economic leaders who think that China signing RCEP and the U.S. not being involved in TPP would be good for the United States. That is an argument I've never heard before, and I've talked to a lot of people in the military, foreign policy, and economic sphere.
And on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way, and Lori Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Misha Dubinsky. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.
On this